You're listening to the AI Ireland podcast. My name is Mark Kelly, the founder of AI Ireland. If you're new to the podcast, AI Ireland's mission is to accelerate the use of AI for the benefit of our society, our competitiveness, and everyone living in Ireland. To achieve this, we run projects of national interest, most notably the AI Awards. As a member of AI Ireland, we make available in-depth case studies of AI being applied in Ireland and access to our private member areas where you'll find exclusive interviews and webinars. To find out additional information on how to become a member, please head over to AIIreland/memberships. Quick one, before this episode starts, about 75% of people who listen to this podcast on audio platforms, Spotify and Apple, haven't yet hit that follow button. If I can ask a favor to you, if you've ever enjoyed this podcast, please can I ask that you hit that follow up button on that app. It helps the show more than I can ever say. The bigger the show gets, the better the guests get. Thank you and enjoy this conversation. Hello everybody, it's Mark Kelly here, founder of AI Ireland. I hope you're doing really well. In today's episode, we'll be discussing the AI Act. For those who don't know, the AI Act is a proposed European law on AI, the first law on AI by a major regulator anywhere. And it's expected to be passed later this year. I'm very happy to say we're joined by Dave Lewis, Interim Director at Adapt Centre. And Dave is also a member of the National Standards Authority of Ireland, and he's participating on subjects such as trustworthy AI standards as well. We're also joined by Brian McElias. Brian, for people that don't know, is a partner of the technology law team of Mason Hayes and Curran, and is head of the artificial intelligence team. Brian rejoined Mason Hayes and Curran in January of 2023 and has spent time in-house as chief intellectual property counsel with an AI fintech startup. During that time, he gained significant experience in operationalizing and commercializing AI platforms and solutions. He led AI invention, harvesting an international patent and trademark portfolio, filing projects. He was also part of a team that conceived and developed a bespoke in-house software invention and R&D tagging tool that has applications in the trade secret space. Also, gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Anthony. Thank you, baby.
So this topic feels it's being kind of pushed kind of straight up the list with all the things that are happening. It's probably in the last 6 to 9 months. I was kind of joking with my wife there yesterday that I find people are talking to me about AI, where about 5 years ago, I was the person that kept speaking about this and some of the ramifications, both positive or negative. For the people that may not know what's happening in this world and, you know, what people can kind of expect, maybe we could start off with the AI Act and where do we actually see this coming? What is the AI Act for people that actually don't know much about it? Dave, I'll start with yourself.
Yeah, so I think, as you mentioned already, I think the AI Act is the sort of the first, probably the most advanced sort of response that we see internationally of a regulation that's really addressing, you know, the power that AI is having over our lives, which I think we're seeing, you know, all the time in our news feeds. You know, in the Adapt Centre for sure, we deal with the impact of AI on digital content, very much, you know, what you receive through your headphones and your screens, etc. And there's been, you know, a lot of international policy discussion, you know, over the last sort of 6 years or so, saying, well, you know, we do need to head in that direction. The technology is moving very quickly. It's very powerful. It's having an impact on increasing areas of our lives, but it's, you know, largely has been unregulated apart from, you know, areas that come under personal data protection, okay, GDPR. So the AI Act is the first attempt to do this in a big regulatory block, i.e. in the EU. And essentially what it's trying to do is to bring sort of products or services that are, you know, contain AI into the sort of the regulatory structure that we already have for products in the EU. You know, so if you buy more or less anything, you know, certainly any electronic or other types of products, you'll see this sort of CE mark that's on the back of it. And that's essentially, you know, is there to give some reassurance to consumers that product is safe. But it also has the function of meaning that if you've got that certification in one part of the European market, it applies in the other market. So it plays two roles. It's protecting health and safety, but it's also a key part of the single market, in that you have a much freer exchange of AI products compared to if all the countries regulated for this individually, and you'd have, you know, 28 odd different AI regulations that you might have to conform to. And, you know, this has been done, you know, we're familiar with this from lots of other products, from medical devices, automobiles, you know, elevators, you know, what have you. Medical devices, probably one of the closer ones. What the AI Act does is, you know, two things, you know, in terms of its impact. It brings in new areas that previously wouldn't have fallen under existing product safety regimes. And it also extends the scope. So as I say, these, you know, product safety regimes, they focus on health and safety. But what the AI Act does is extend the scope to cover all our other fundamental rights, which is sort of reference to the European Charter of Fundamental Rights, which sort of actually links to a large range of other legislation as well. But it sort of, you know, in that very simple way, makes a concrete link between AI technology and, you know, lots of other aspects of life that we regulate in the EU, and, you know, with the aim that products will conform with that.
And Dave, you know, for a lot of companies, they are, their head is down, they're just working away, getting through, you know, week to week, month to month. Why should they start to lift the head up and take note of this?
Well, I think, you know, it will be some companies, probably many companies, you know, who are using AI may not find themselves subject to this, okay? Certainly, they will have to figure out whether they're going to be subject to it or not. So the AI Act takes a risk-based approach. So it classifies different types of applications by whether they're what they call a prohibited level. So there's some applications that basically the, you know, Europe is saying, we just don't want these in Europe. So that's things like, you know, the sort of social scoring systems that we've perhaps seen in other countries being used on a large scale, you know, specific uses for law enforcement, facial recognition, for example. So there's a few things that are, you know, being put beyond the pale. Then there's a section which is called higher risk, which is where there will be new regulatory requirements on companies, and that involves them, you know, demonstrating that they have a they've done a risk assessment on that product, and that they've got a quality management system that allows them to sort of reliably conduct and document and communicate to their customers and to the regulators that they've done that risk assessment. Okay, so similar, you know, in tone to what you might be doing if you're an organization that already does ISO 9000 type quality standards. So it brings it into that sort of sphere. And of course, a lot of software is traditionally, you know, if you're not in a particular area like automotive or aerospace or medical devices, you probably haven't had to worry about this beyond, as I said earlier, you know, issues around GDPR. But now this is a scope extension. And I think, you know, it's a scope extension, you know, as I mentioned, both in terms of, for existing regulated products, expanding the scope of risks to cover not just health and safety, but fundamental rights. So, you know, you may have a medical device, you need to make sure that it's safe, okay? But you may now also need to make sure, well, does it work sufficiently well for both men and women, or for people from different groups, if it's got an AI component in it, which you're going to need to do before. And then there's a bunch of applications that are specified, which, you know, can be extended over time, which include things like use of AI in recruitment, educational assessments, democracy, you know, conduct of democratic systems, conduct of judicial systems, and a bunch of other areas that are really falling into this sort of product certification regime for the first time. You know, so companies in those areas will find, oh yes, you know, now we're having to, you know, actually see, you know, figure out how we're going to get a CE mark on our product. And for most companies, they'll be able to do it themselves. For some areas, they will have to go to an external certification body. So, you know, those are the changes. So it's the change in the scope of the rights are being protected, not just health and safety, but, you know, all of our other fundamental rights, including our existing privacy rights. And also that new application areas are falling into the remit. And, you know, the bottom line in terms of why they should be concerned is they do have, you know, dissuasive levels of fine. They, you know, product can be taken off the market. Fines can be levied, you know, of a similar order that you'd see with GDPR. You know, they're designed to influence behavior.
Dave, thank you for that. Brian, just bringing yourself into the conversation, how can companies get prepared for the AI Act?
Thanks, Mark. Thanks very much for having me. Yeah, I think Dave has given a really, really good overview there of what the Act is about and its impact. And I really like the way he kind of drew the analogy with medical devices. And I think that's a good place to start when it comes to, you know, how people get prepared. I look at the AI Act as being almost fit into two categories. One is the products and the devices that Dave was talking about there, and they're in Annex 2. And to an extent, they live in a world, a highly regulated world already. They will stay in that world, but they will get additional obligations put on them under this Act. Under Annex 3, then, you know, Dave was referring to, you know, let's say the software type applications like in recruitment, remote biometric monitoring, credit scoring, insurance tech, fintech, education, that sort of thing. Those guys currently live in a world where they generally tend to launch products and they iterate and they do their best to comply with things like GDPR, etc. I think this is a massive step change for them in particular, in that before they launch, if they are indeed caught by this legislation, they need to have their self-certification in place before they launch. So they will be treated like a de facto, let's say, medical device, where unless they can demonstrate via their own technical documentation and to a regulator, if they come knocking, that, you know, they were ready to go on the day they launched, they're in breach. And I think that's the massive kind of step change or shift you have with this legislation, is that the tech industry is not familiar with this type of process. And Dave said that a couple of times there. And preparing for that sort of process is new, and it's a significant challenge. I mean, one thing that people can be, I suppose, relatively confident of is that the draft of the legislation that's currently in place, the big picture stuff, I think, is probably done when it comes to high risk. There will be tweaks around it, and some companies or more companies will fall in or outside of it, but the big picture stuff is already done. So there's an element of people being in a position now to start preparing. And they can do things like, you know, do a kind of an in or out or go, no go sort of analysis to say, am I caught by this legislation? I think anyone who is thinking about this legislation is probably in the area of AI sufficient enough to trick the definition of an AI system. I mean, if they weren't, they wouldn't even be aware of it, to be honest. And I think then what it really comes down to is, am I high-risk AI, or am I this sort of AI like a deep fake or a chatbot where I have to, you know, implement some sort of transparency regime? I sincerely doubt a lot of your listeners will be in the prohibited areas, to be quite frank. So it's the Annex 2, Annex 3 analysis is where I think a lot of people should start. They just look at those two annexes and go, you know, if they're currently regulated under one of the pieces of legislation, like medical device legislation in Annex 2, they're going to be fairly savvy company and they're going to know what they're doing anyway. It's for the others then to look at Annex 3 to see, you know, where do they fall in? And from there, then what you're looking at is putting in place plan so that you are compliant by your launch day. So it's almost like looking to the future to go, when am I launching? And then putting in your plan to say, well, what sort of assessment do I need to do in the meantime? And you look at the 7 requirements in the legislation to see what you need to comply with. And then see, can you get everything done before your anticipated launch date? And indeed get your certification in place by that launch date. So it, I think it's a significant undertaking, but like all these things, you know, once someone goes through it a few times, it might not be as significant as I think, but it's the first go will be the really challenging thing, I think.
Brian, when you look at that, and thank you for that kind of overview, is there any reasonable measures that a company can take in preparation? Because we're going to kind of come on to this as the conversation goes through, because there's a few kind of blind spots that we see need clarification. And from an organization's point of view, the AI is moving, you know, 6 months, 9 months, 12 months. It's looking quite different to previous iterations because of the advancements. Is there any, you know, and I know it's an exhaustive process, but any reasonable measures that people could start to put in place?
Absolutely. I think the first thing is that, you know, there's a lot of information out there, and in fairness to the commission, they're producing some useful notes now that the sort of guidance that you really, really want for them isn't yet published, but that's, you know, reasonable given that, you know, the law itself is not yet signed. But if I was someone in this space, what I would do is I would focus on Annex 2 and Annex 3, and the legislation is fairly easily available online. Look at the list of types of technology in Annex 2 and Annex 3, and you'll have a reasonable understanding as to whether you fit into one of those or not. If you are in the space where you don't fit into those, then have a look at the transparency provisions, I believe it's Article 52, where if you, let's say, have an element, a digital assistant or a chatbot to your system, you may need to fall into those. But, you know, compliance with the transparency obligations is not tremendously difficult. It's a technical add-on. So let's say, for instance, you do have a digital assistant and it's quite a good, you know, a chatbot, you know, quite convincing. You need to disclose on the face of it before, you know, your customers use it that they're dealing with an AI. I mean, it's not a massive thing. Thing that I would maybe draw the analogy to would be like the cookies banner. It's annoying, but it's a technical legal fix that's possible to implement quite quickly. And so if you're not in the high risk or the transparency type layer of risk, I'm going to assume the vast majority of our listeners are not going to be in the prohibited risk. Well, then you kind of, like Dave said, you may not be caught by this legislation. A good thing, I suppose, to anticipate is that it's not designed to cover every single AI application. The meat of it is designed to be targeted at high-risk applications. That's where the really kind of tough stuff is coming. And to kind of hark back to something I was saying earlier, if you are in that space or you genuinely believe you're in that space, you do need to take advice. But then you also need to start planning. And what I would do is I would take the 7 requirements and take them internally to like your ops team, definitely your data science guys, because they'll understand a lot of the requirements around the bias in the data set that's being asked of, and take it to your risk, your legal people as well, if you have those people. And together, you can probably do a lot of brainstorming on your own to do some prep for taking that advice. And then overall, I think the key concept is, remember, you can't launch until you're compliant. So you have to set your launch date and work backwards from your compliance perspective.
Yeah, you would be surprised that there are companies, quite a few, that don't do that, don't do that approach and working within silos. And particularly in some of the larger organizations where you think that communication may be there across the different departments. Dave, taking on just what Brian has said there, the AI Act is yet to be ratified. However, there are some areas that need clarification and some improvement. Where do we start with this? Because there's quite a few areas there that, you know, we're still in a bit of the dark over.
Yeah. So I think, you know, one of the things that the AI Act, which it does, which is similar to other types of, you know, product safety regulation in Europe, is it defers a lot of technical details to European standards. Okay. And it's not, doesn't strictly say you have to follow those standards, but that's the recommended way in which you conduct your quality, your quality management processes and your risk management processes. And it gives you then, you know, consistent language that can be used in your documentation. And that you know, those standards are being developed. There's, you know, a set of European standards bodies out there already collaborating on this. So there's organizations like Zen, Zenlec, Etsy, who are legally able to produce these harmonized standards. And actually what will be happening with many of those is that they will be referencing standards that have already been worked on at the international level. So that's outside of Europe. And, you know, as you mentioned in the introduction, I've done, been collaborating with the National Standards Authority of Ireland on their contribution to international standards around AI, where there are, you know, existing whole range of standards that are being developed that you could already dip into and start sort of reading around the subject. They're all available through a paywall, but they are available through the ISO website. There's a subcommittee called SC42. That's the magic number. And if you search for their specification, and there would be, for example, there's one standard that's I think it's available as a draft, and it'll soon be finalized, called 42001. Which is, you know, an outline for a management systems for AI, for AI developers. Okay, so that would give you a sort of a high level view of the sort of structures you would have to put in place, especially if you're an organization that isn't used to working in these, standardized quality management systems. But it essentially takes the same structure that you would see in things like ISO 9000, or for example, if you're already conformant to ISO 27000 on information security management systems, a lot of the structures in terms of the organizational structures would be the same. You know, like what are the responsibilities on your management? What's the resources you need to put in place? What documentations you need to do? And then it's specialized to the technical requirements of AI specifically. And then that, you know, cascades to reference other standards. Some are available. So there's a risk management standard and a number of data quality standards that are available. There's some high level reports which aren't very prescriptive on things like, you know, dealing with bias or dealing with issues of trustworthiness in AI. So there are mechanisms there, and the advantage is those will be sort of, those standards will be referred to potentially as harmonized standards. So the European groups are, you know, in the main, probably going to take those international standards and just, you know, perhaps provide an annex to explain how they relate to the AI Act. So some of the research that we do in the ADAPT Center is focusing on those sort of mapping. So, you know, there is more technical detail out there. You know, I would say, you know, following that existing line of ISO type standards and European standards is important because they are the ones that tend to get referred to by the regulators in these sort of product safety processes within Europe, you know. Whereas in fact there's quite a wide range of other standards, and there's lots of guidance documents, and every big AI company has its own sort of set of guidelines that they published about how they do these things internally. But, you know, and, you know, certainly those companies can, you know, provide their documentation according to those standards. But if you're fresh to this, you know, going to the ISO standards, probably the best way of getting prepared, because that's most likely to align closely with what the regulators are going to be able to digest most easily.
Thank you, Dave. And Brian, from, you know, as Dave has mentioned, there's some additional unknowns from a national perspective we need to take into consideration some of these. Would you agree?
Yeah. And, you know, the one that I would home in on for Ireland would be the provisions that would affect SMEs. I mean, apart from, you know, a substantial, but let's say small minority of very large international firms in the country, we are a nation of SMEs. So I think it's worth paying attention to those provisions. And there are two provisions in particular which purport to be kind of measures in support of innovation and, you know, in support of those entities that might find it a genuine struggle to get up the ladder on this and try to get compliant. there's references to, you know, putting in place regulatory sandboxes and that SMEs will be given priority access to these regulatory sandboxes. But then I suppose you think about it, well, how do these sandboxes get put in place? It'll be down to the member states to do it. How will they be resourced? How well will they be resourced? If you are an SME going into a regulatory sandbox, you know, what's the sort of bandwidth of the sandbox? How quickly can you get in, get out? You know, if you're in a very highly competitive market, do you even want to go into it? So then you look for other supporting measures, and, you know, there's obligations on member states and the commission to put in place very simple, straightforward guidance on how to comply and to provide accessible templates for compliance. You know, in an effort, I suppose, to in some way bring along those companies with less resources and to try to teach them how to comply in a manner that won't, I suppose, cost them a fortune with external advisors. There's also even measures in there for, you know, an obligation on the member states set up bodies who will need to be there to answer queries and provide advice on compliance. I don't know how this will actually fall out in due course. It'd be great to see, you know, that a substantial investment on that side. There's no, you know, soundings yet from a member state level as to how something like that will work out. But if I think if that was done really well, and if that was fleshed out well, and thought through a little bit more, there could be a substantial gain in particular for, you know, companies in Ireland who will struggle. I mean, at the moment, you know, if you're a tech company coming up through, let's say, your various seed and investment rounds, you pay attention to the risk and compliance piece to the greatest extent that you can and to the resources available to you. And now if suddenly you are being popped into an environment where you will be almost obliged to hit the same sort of regulatory markers as, you know, kind of pharma or medical device, you can see how that's a massive challenge for those entities who would try to comply. And hopefully we'd see, you know, these measures being fleshed out now to give them a good chance.
I agree 100% with Brian as well, because I you know, you already see sandbox pilots being established in Spain and the UK, even though they won't be subject to the act, really getting their act together in terms of the supports for native, indigenous companies. So I think it is really important that Ireland, steps up, you know, at a governmental level to put in these, information sharing and sandbox initiatives that we're seeing emerging in other states.
Yeah, this is a hot topic, and I'm sure we'll be discussing this very, very soon in more detail once again. Dave and Brian McGellia, thank you very much for your time today. We've been discussing in this episode the AI Act, the Act's proposed European law on AI, the first law on AI by a major regulator anywhere, and we expect it to be passed later this year. We've been joined by Dave Lewis, Interim Director at Adapt Centre, and Brian McGellius. Brian is a partner in the technology law team of Mason Hayes and Curran and is head of artificial intelligence in that team. Thank you very much for your time today, Jeff.
Brilliant. Thanks, Sean.
Membership of AI Ireland placed your organization at the center of the fastest growing technology sector in the world today. As a member, you'll have access to a diverse and highly engaged professional community, which is committed to driving artificial intelligence forward in Ireland. Membership of AI Ireland is for any organization employing data and analytics. We offer memberships to corporate, government and SME organizations. Interested to find out more? Contact mark@aiawards.ie.